Okay, I think we'll get started. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming. I know late in the day, last session, one of the last sessions before we get into the evening stuff. And yesterday, a lot of people went out dancing and everything, so I'm sure everyone's feeling a little tired. But thanks for coming. This is hopefully going to be a productive, informative session. So how does Microsoft handle my spam? My name is Ori Kashi. I'm a PM in Information Protection, working on the anti-spam team. And this is Tamar.
Hi, I'm Tamar, PM lead in the anti-spam team, responsible for anti-spam analysis.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
So just before we get started and going into the agenda of what we're going to talk about today, just kind of an introduction about anti-spam and spam as a whole and why you should care and what's important there. So spam, I mean, everyone's experienced it at one point in their life or another, I'm sure. And it's constantly evolving. The landscape today is vastly different than it was, a year ago or 6 months ago even, barring even, 5 years ago we talk about. I've heard quotes during this conference about, how the rates have dropped from what used to be, 95% of or more of mail was actually spam to these days, we're down into the upper 60s, mid 60s. And it's true, the percentage overall of mail spam has greatly decreased, but the sophistication of the problem has greatly increased. And so the complexity of solving how we deal with that has, side by side in parallel, also increased. So, we're coming out with newer technologies all the time. And why do people continue to spam? Obviously, it's one of the most lucrative, get-rich-quick schemes you can have. There's actually equations you can look up for calculating, based on, what it costs to go through a service, whether it be our service or, some of the other mail providers out there, how easy they make it to send out mail and what the cost is to, break a CAPTCHA and sign up or use some bulk sender, exactly what your return on investment will be. And it's very easy to calculate that so that it's constantly a comparison of, what benefit, what return you're going to get. And the margins can be slim, but the volume is so great that they still make a lot of money off of this. And when we talk about spam, just to better define it, it's not just, that junk email that you get, cluttering your inbox, telling you about, pharmaceuticals or this and that. It comes in so many flavors of, phishing schemes, and potentially some people consider bulk mail as spam, and everything in between. One of the biggest things we see today is actually, very targeted spear phishing attacks, even more sophisticated than before, where they go after key individuals in an organization in a better effort to compromise in depth and not just, do a breadth attack on an organization or an EDU, for example. And so we have this technology that we're talking about today is how that anti-spam protection lives as part of Exchange and as, EOP as a service, and how we integrate at all the different points and all the configuration and settings and bits that we've put in place as part of our architecture in order to provide protection from this new evolving landscape of threats. So just to give you a little more background, myself, I'm on the product group side of things. So I'm working on the engine, a lot of the machine learning and heuristics and automation and detection that's going on that we're building into our system and working with the different partner teams as part of protecting O365 and Outlook.com even and a lot of our other services. And Tamar, she's head of the analyst team, which is that one of the most important components in keeping up to date with our protection in detecting the campaigns that are constantly coming out and giving that input back into the service so that our automation and detection can get to that zero-day detection threshold that we want it to be there in order not to let any compromises go through. And why we are your best friends. So, we're in one of those interesting roles where if we're doing our job well, you never know we're there. You're going to, experience a clean inbox, no spam, no nothing. You're not even going to think about anti-spam, and that's where we want to be. We want to be your invisible guardian angels that, are taking the onus out of dealing with this problem day to day and actually making life simpler and taking one thing off your plate as an administrator or an ISV. And we are constantly adding additional points of automation and points of integration to facilitate that. So in this presentation, we're going to talk about three major points and really going through the list. So we have the proprietary automated protection. And this is what I was talking about when we were talking about heuristic detection and automation and the responses that correspond with it. You know, if you've ever had one of your mailboxes banned by us and you've had to pursue delisting or something like that, that's an example of our automated protection kicking in and stopping that before it actually spreads within your organization or damages your reputation further in that situation. And we build this system to accept a variety of inputs. And constantly get real-time feedback from the rest of the system and the service so that as new threats emerge, it's constantly updating itself and learning from what's out there and what the shape and vector of these threats are. And besides that, we have the dedicated analyst team, which Tamar can give an introduction to.
We'll cover it later.
Okay. And this is what I was talking about before. It's that expert monitoring team that is constantly looking at what's coming out of the system, false positives, false negatives, when you submit spam samples, all those pieces that require that human eye and that scrutiny and that expertise. These are SMEs that we have you know, fully dedicated in order to capture that rapid response aspect of it and tune our system so it's the best that it can be. And finally, we're leveraging third-party reputation data in all of this so that we're not doing this in isolation. While you know, we're very proud of the systems and detection and everything we have, and we're a very large mail provider in the scheme of things, we know that there are partner teams out there and partner companies out there that are experiencing some of the same problems and maintaining lists and actually building their own reputation systems as well. And wherever possible, we're leveraging that information, folding it into what we do, and integrating that to give a more complete solution so that, you know, maybe if a threat is exposing itself on one service and it hasn't hit us yet, we'll get the jump on that by actually pulling in data from other reputation providers and judging that appropriately when compared to what we're seeing day to day. So I'm going to kick this off by talking. We've split this up into really an inbound and an outbound protection kind of diagram and kind of explanation. So I'm going to start with the inbound architecture of our protection service and the corresponding mail flow. So you'll see on the board, we'll go step by step. So first step, edge protection. So mail coming from the rest of the world, we know from the get-go, there's lists of bad IPs, there's DBEB, there's a bunch of other mechanisms that we utilize in order to just block on the edge right away things that we've seen time and time again, and we have extreme high confidence that it is malicious. So we don't even bother going through that content detection and cracking open that message. We just block it on the edge right there. And that's constantly updated by our own optics and leveraging some of that third-party information that I was mentioning before. Now, if it does pass that edge protection and it goes to the next layer for us, it's actually going into the detection aspect of it, where we're looking through all these messages that are coming in, and we're looking at a variety of things. So the first thing, obviously, you know, we have our very straightforward checks like DKIM, DMARC, SPF checks, things along those lines, very black and white in terms of, you know, it should be a hard fail or a hard success, and that'll give us some indication of, you know, how high confidence we are that something is spam or not. And then the other aspect of this is actually the more semantic classification aspect of reputation, where we have this more sophisticated detection engine that, as I mentioned before, we're taking in a bunch of different data points and with our own proprietary algorithms, making a decision on weighted reputation to say, you know, this individual, this sender is going to have a history of good behavior or a history of bad behavior. And we're continuing to invest heavily into this technology so that as we move forward, we make that aspect of the service even more robust and take in even more data sources such that we can detect variances more earlier on and be more proactive about that kind of detection and protection. In addition to that, for whatever tenant this sender's mail is intended to go to, we have whatever that tenant-specific configuration is. And these comprise of, you know, transport rules and admin configuration in EAC that is going to complement the detection that we already have in place and the rules that we already have in place. So if you have things like safe senders, exclusion lists, things like that, that's going to come into play there, where we'll actually you know, take that into account when we're making a judgment on, is this good mail or not? And then once that decision has come in, once that verdict is made, we'll actually take the appropriate response. And we have a philosophy of kind of a gradient response based on confidence and severity of what we're seeing. Now, this can go anywhere from, you know, we might delay the mail briefly in order to do extra scanning and extra filtering, put it through the ringer, so to speak, so that we can really be sure we've run all of our, you know, all of our different agents on it very closely. Or it can go flat out to say, you know what, we're super high confident that this is malicious mail, and this is triggering addition to a block list, or we're going to throttle this. And then, as I said before, depending on your configuration, it might take other actions. So, you know, if you're going to send it to quarantine, or if you've marked it to reject, or, you know, you've chosen to accept it and go to your junk mail folder, depending on your spam confidence level, your SCL value that you've configured. Now, that human aspect that I was mentioning before, that's our, you know, extremely valuable analyst support and engineering on-call team. And I can't stress enough that no matter how sophisticated our automation and detection engines are, we always have that human element that we're constantly involved with the system. You know, in an earlier session about EOP, we talked about how the engineering on-call team is there to proactively detect any issues so that if any of our agents or anything gets compromised, we'll find that out before it'll affect any customers at all. And then we have our analyst team that's focused on making sure that our detection parameters and characteristics are best in class and catching things just as they appear. And our support team is there to also take any concerns and escalate any tickets. So if we see people that are putting in delisting requests, people that are saying that their spam was maybe misclassified, we have false positive or false negative reports, or some any other issue, that comes directly to them. We all work together as kind of one unit, and then we all have access to that automated system that I was describing before. And the way that we have access to that system is via a layer of tools for modifying, tuning the system, overriding it when need be, and really using it as also an investigation platform such that we can get to the bottom of, you know, any kind of strange behavior, or if there's a rise in, you know, any kind of traffic or something like that would indicate that, oh, there's something that we're not catching, they can intervene also and put that in themselves. And we're on that all the time. And the last aspect of this diagram is that feedback loop. So no system obviously is perfect. You know, we try our best. We've got people working on this all the time. We also are looking to have that reactive input as well. And that comes back in a couple of different forms. One is from our customers in the form of junk mail reporting and letting us know when there's a miss. That goes back into our analyst team. It goes back into the automated system and lets it know that, okay, hey, you didn't mark this. Please, you know, take a closer look at this message. Take a fingerprint of it. Do whatever we need in order to get that into our system so it doesn't miss detection in the future. And then the other side of this is also incorporating those data sources that I was describing before. So if we've got third-party data sources or information from other services that can also help across the board in anti-spam protection, we've got that coming in as well. And that's coming in both as subscriptions to those third parties and that internal data that I was describing. That's coming in real time in many cases, as well as historical behavioral data. So now Tamar is going to go a little more into reputation and some of the different features we have going for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Ori, for walking us through the architecture. Now let's drill into several components in more detail, tell you more about it, provide data about availability that I'm sure you're all curious about. We'll start with talking about DKIM, DMARC, SPF, and IPv6 in general. While IPv4 range of IP enable us to maintain a list of spammy IPs that we were able to block any mail coming from that range of IP, the huge space of IPv6 addresses will not enable it anymore. So we need to find other technology to be able to protect you from anti-spam. And the reason I like those two pictures is that we cannot manage the Niagara Fall flows through the same pipeline of the fireman hose. So it's not?
There you go.
It is? Okay. So if we cannot trust the efficiency of the IP blocking list, can we trust the sender? Okay, I'm getting that email in my inbox. How can I know that it's really coming from PayPal? How can I know that it's not a spammer impersonating to PayPal? If you're getting an email from your admin, if you're getting an email from your bank asking you to change your credential, to update them, how can you really trust that it's coming from them? If a friend is sending you an email saying, hey, follow that cool link, how could you know that it's really coming from him? Spammer is spoofing. They are tricking users on a daily basis to get their credential and to infect their machine with malware. So if the displayed from address could be easily spoofed, how can we overcome it? One of the ways to overcome it is by implementing SPF. How does SPF work? A domain publish the IP associated with the domain in the DNS. So when the receiver is getting an email from Tony at tony.com, he can look up the IP addresses and check if it's associated with that domain. The OSPF help us identify the sender. It has an inefficiency in two cases. In case of email forwarding, when me at sender.net send an email and it's been forwarded to you at receiver.com, receiver.com will check the SPF of that email and the associated IP, IP3, will fail. The SPF check will fail because the associated IP with that domain is IP1. In case of shared IP, a malware sitting behind the share IP can impersonate to sender.net and send an email, and the SPF check will succeed because that shared IP is actually associated with that domain. So how can we overcome those two problems? How can we mitigate even those areas? By using authenticated signature. So how DKIM works. The domain that is interesting in sending an email needs to publish a public key. The email is being hashed and encrypted using a private key, while the receiving end is going to the DNS, get the public IP, decrypt using the public IP, and we have a match. If the public key and the private key are not matched, DKIM will fail. Spammer has nothing to can do about it. They cannot use the public IP to spoof our messages. DKIM is using cryptography to validate that the message is not being spoofed. But DKIM do not compare. DKIM based the domain from the DKIM header, the D field within the DKIM header, that's what used to determine the domain, and that's what used to be retrieving the public key. DKIM as a signature mechanism doesn't compare the displayed from address with the domain within the DKIM header. That's where DMARC coming into play. DMARC is an anti-phishing, anti-spoofing technology, which compare the displayed address that the user sees with the domain within the D field in the DMARC header to make sure that the message is coming from that specific domain. if someone is providing mailing services on your behalf, you will have to provide your private key for that third party, so they will be able to do the right decryption that would be associated with your domain in the display. DMARC also provides reporting. So if I'm an admin and I'm configuring SPF or I'm configuring DKIM and sending email and I'm getting a report that DKIM failed, I have the notification said, oh, I will look into it. Oh, I forgot to configure this or that, and I will fix it, and that would give me an assurance that the email are going through. If someone is trying to spoof your domain, you will get a report as well. You have reference for all the technologies that I talked about it in the document. So what are we suggesting to do following these technical explanations? In order to enable in IPv6 receiving email from anonymous sender, we are requiring PTR record and SPF or DKIM. One of them with the PTR must be deployed in order to enable us to provide you the necessary protection. So if you're asking when that will be available, I'm happy to announce that by the end of June, we will support SPF for IPv4 and IPv6 and inbound DKIM for IPv4 and IPv6. Next on our plan is to support outbound DKIM and DMARC as well. Okay, back to the architecture slide. Still on the same component, we're going to look into reputation. I will talk about bulk reputation, and a really later we'll cover different level of reputation as well. We will not get into it right now. So what is bulk? Let's start with bulk definition. There is no right or wrong about bulk. There is no yes or no about bulk. It's only about a spectrum of gray. On one hand, we have the really good bulk sender. You intentionally register to get emails from those specific senders. You want their email in your inbox, and there is always unsubscribe link for that, and it works. On the other hand, we have a provider that got your email, that bought your email from some list. Sometimes that list will be appropriate for their content, and sometimes it will not. Sometimes they will include unsubscribe link. Sometimes it will work, sometimes it will not. How many in this room, how many people in this room would like to get this promotion email? How many would like to know about hotel deal? How many would like to know about the next, food festival? How many, please? How many would like to see that email in their inbox? Okay. How many don't want to see that email in their inbox? Whoa. Ori. Take your hand off. You're messing with my numbers. So based on based on our submission coming from our customer, third of our submitters don't want to see that email in their inbox, and two-thirds of them want to see that email in their inbox. Today. That's right. That's about spam. It's changing every day, every week, every month, definitely. And there is the unsubscribe link there, always in really, really small letter, grayed out. But if you look for it, you'll find it. Again, proving the point that there is no yes or no about bulk. It's about user flavor. So what do we have today? Today we have an in-house build list of bad bulk provider. We have their IPs list, and we are blocking based on that. The admin experience is that you can go into the Exchange admin center, and you can choose to turn on the option to route all mail that we are tagging as bulk based on this list of IP into your junk mail folder. It will not vanish, but it will go into your junk mail folder. That's one option. The other option is using our very advanced ETR. Admin can define anything you want to do with that bulk mail. It can add a string to the subject. It can decide to delete it, up to the admin. Oh, sorry. The user experience in that case is that the user can always safe list or decide to block a sender, a specific sender. In the
how does it actually work? If the user safe list and then the admin blocks it.
It will be safe list for that specific. No. Sorry, Wendy, but she's right. Trust me, Wendy. If he checks the...
It doesn't matter. As long as the transport rule is configured to reject or to stop processing on that message, then it will honor that setting. If the rule, though, is to like set a header or something else that allows the processing to continue, and the transport rules are processed before the spam rules are, so if it makes it to the spam rules processing and there's a safe list from the end user,
everybody hear that, or you want 22? Okay. Thank you.
Also, when you talk about safe and exclusion lists, it's going to also override our global list as well. You can actually exclude from that and say, I want to get mail from certain domains over the global list. So if that's what you're concerned about Microsoft's global list, that you can go over, but the user cannot supersede the admin, is Wendy's point.
What's next on our plate? We're gonna significantly increase our bulk protection by leveraging well-known third-party bulk reputation provider. It will be available by the end of June. I can share with you that we are already testing it in our environment, not impacting any email customer, but it's already under test. And in the future, we don't have it right now, and it won't be available by end of June, but in the future, the admin will have the ability to define the sensitivity of, so bulk is going from really good bulk mail provider to really bad. So the admin will be able to provide this sensitivity, low, medium, high, how much of that bulk you want into your inbox and how much in your junk mail folder. Okay. Any question before we're moving on to the next topic? Okay, Ori mentioned the analyst. So at the beginning of the presentation, we talked about three things that we are doing as part of our service. First is we have automation in place, best of breed, to prevent zero-day spam campaign. Second, we are leveraging third-party reputation and data provider. And third, we have the analyst dedicated team that looks into our system and act. So what is the analyst role? The analyst role is divided into two. First, they are there to monitor the system and immediately, in real time, be able to identify merging spam campaign, different trends coming from different infrastructure, and immediately they can block that spam campaign. That's their ability. This is a part, as Ori already mentioned, that is highly valuable simply because spammer can learn how the automation defense is working and overcome it, but they cannot overcome the human brain. Yes?
How are they able to do that without being able to look at all the messages?
The analysts? They're looking into patterns. They're looking into submissions that we are getting. They're looking into spammer behavior. We have kind of a demo, a click through, to show you exactly how. As I was saying, the human brain is not pre-programmed, doesn't need software upgrade. Awesome, great, on the spot, they learn faster. So how they do it? I cannot demo. I wish I could, but I cannot expose our analyst artillery. So I will provide a click-through, very simple, obvious flow, just to give you a sense of what the analysts are doing 24/7, 365 days a year. Sometimes during holidays, it looks like it's more, but more than 24 hours a day. Again, a lot is being striked out, but I'll show you what I can. So an analyst are looking into submissions that we are getting from customer, that they are clustered. Analysts choose a cluster to work on. Within the cluster of submission, analysts can look into the different sample, can analyze the different mail component. He can look into something that looks suspicious to him that might be, again, in this simple flow. I'm assuming that someday a spammer will hear that presentation. So I'm really following a basic flow. But they can recognize a pattern within the body of the message. They can search our entire submission base to see if that pattern belongs to more than one spam campaign. Finally, they define a common pattern that addresses that group of spam campaign. They push a rule into the system. That spam campaign is blocked. The rule is being monitored to make sure that it's tuned correctly, and that's it. That's a segue to my next slide. I want to thank our customer for submitting to us, and I want to ask you to submit. Your submission are extremely valuable to us. Last week, I want to give you an example. Last week, we have a customer that submit a lot of submission to us. Last week, we got a submission 6 minutes after the mail got into our customer inbox. False negative submission, meaning this is spam. We put a rule in place that was a big spam campaign. The submission helped us a lot. We've put a rule in place. That specific rule blocked 5 million spam messages in the next 24 hours. So this is a huge impact. This is a way to influence our filter. This is a way to state your tone. I said before, spam is about flavor. Speak up. Let us know what you want. It's very important to us. I've embedded into the presentation, which you all get, obviously, the different ways that you can submit to us. The most preferred one is using the junk mail reporting tool. That's the best and safest way for all the data to get to us the way we needed it. But anyway, it works. Ori, back to you.
Sure. Great. So thanks, Tamar. And as we've stayed so long in this one box, the reason why we're talking about reputation so much and detection, and we'll talk about this in the outbound context as well, is because, as Tamar said, you know, we can't have that analyst brain more than 24 hours a day. But what if we could take a little of the pressure off of it by making the system smarter? And reputation is the way that we're going to do that moving forward. That's why we're investing in it so heavily, because it gives us less of a black and white, you know, here's a threshold, we've seen that, spammers figure it out, they game it, we change the threshold, arms race that we've had for so long, and we're going to start incorporating so many different types of data about behavior, about you know, frequency of mail, volume of mail, type of mail, things that we can abstract out about the mail and pattern recognition, that it's going to be less and less viable, and more importantly, less economical to actually game our system in that way. And that's what it comes down to in the end. If it's that expensive for a spammer to send through our service and they don't see their return on investment, they're going to leave us alone eventually. But they're never actually going to leave us
they're
alone.
They're not, so. But yeah.
We can hope, right?
Let's hope.
One day. But, yep. So going into reputation. So as Tamar said, in the IPv6 world, reputation is going to be king, because we can't monitor all of these IPs in a way that, you know, just maintaining these blacklists, having, you know, finite number of IPs sitting there on the edge, and that's what we're going to rely on anymore. We have to incorporate other aspects like the sender domain and patterns that we've seen in history about that and the behavior and make that decision a little more dynamic than we have before. So in this case, when we're looking at that, it's really just behavior, the level of trust that we have. And that goes into the second point, really, is knowing a sender more than just a stranger. You know, if you're getting mail from the first time from somebody in the wild and your organization is getting that mail, we need to have a way to pull that information to say, well, has anyone else gotten email from that sender? Has it come before into our network? If we can harness that data and do that kind of data share across the service and across multiple services that Microsoft has, we're going to empower our system to make much smarter decisions much quicker without having to build that rapport between just sender-specific mailbox like we've had before, or to say, okay, they've sent so much obvious spam or they've been so abusive that it's very clear-cut to say, yeah, this guy is a bad guy, you know, block list. So this is going to give us that granularity that we've been looking for so long in order to go into the IPv6 world where we're not going to rely as much on IP, although that will remain a data point for us. Now, today, like I said, we've got these thresholds, we've got this monitoring of these block lists, we've got all this other behavior that we check on. Moving forward, the types of behavior that we're going to look on is really deviations of, you know, is this different than anything today? And if you're corresponding with one of your customers, you know, down the road, and you've always gotten mail from them in English, for example, and then we start getting mail in Russian from them, we might look at it a little differently. We might think about it a little differently. And that's the kind of deviations from normality that are going to power our system and give us that extra edge in reputation. Now, how many of you have ever had a customer try to send you something or a partner try to send you something and then had to call you up or communicate with you differently to say, hey, I got a reject back from Microsoft. You know, I was blocked. What's going on? Raise your hand. Anybody? Yep. Okay. It happens. For whatever reason, you know, potentially good companies and tenants get listed on these third-party block lists, on our block lists, by behavior that was suspicious. Maybe it was, you know, just over the edge, or maybe they had a compromise and they did not pursue delisting yet. So the first thing to do in that case, and they should get that in the bounce back actually, is pursue delisting with us. We're very willing to work with anyone that we've blocked if they take the time to contact us so that we can delist them and so that their mail can get through, because it's just as important to us as our customers and our you know, our own tenants sending mail that they receive the mail that they're expecting to get. I mean, we don't want to prevent you from doing business, obviously. And so in order to do that, you just pursue our normal delisting pathway, which we're investing now as well even more heavily. And right now, it'll be where you're contacting support via email or via opening a ticket. It'll get addressed. And then moving forward, if there's continuous requests for delisting, we're obviously not going to give a free pass to everybody. So there's less of a concern about, you know, someone gaming that delisting system, because we are monitoring that. It's not a blind channel where anyone can just get off our list and get a get out of jail free card that way. And then the other side of that is really reporting junk mail from a sender. And this is what Tamar spoke about, is, you know, can't stress enough, those submissions are critical. If you are receiving mail from someone that you're not expecting, or you can tell that, you know, one of your partners got compromised, and you could be, you know, the first straw, or the first, you know, strike against the campaign that's just starting and just opening up right now. And that's very, very invaluable. Now, shifting gears a bit to outbound architecture. So this is very similar flow. I tried to keep it, you know, you can draw parallels between our inbound and outbound protection. I don't think I talked about this before, but in the top right, you can see that we have, you know, that data flow, mail flow, and process flow that we have in place just to navigate through this diagram. And definitely take a look at it more closely when you get a chance, and feel free to contact us with any questions. But walking through this diagram, you know, we're looking first at detection again, and reputation. I can't say this enough. Outbound reputation, just as robust, if not more so, than inbound, because we know the behavior of our customers. We know, you know, this is the amount of mail I expect to get from, you know, Contoso Pharma on a Monday. So if all of a sudden I see 10 times that mail, something's wrong. And there's a lot of value in knowing, well, if you're using DBEB, for example, you've uploaded your directory and you've uploaded other objects, and, you know, if you're on-prem or if you're hosted and we have even more visibility into your configuration, we can know what to expect from you at any given point and react accordingly. And additionally, we have that other spam detection engine similar to what we use on inbound to classify what we see coming into us. And those analyst rules, they're running inbound and outbound. So we can detect, is this message spam? And that's how we get to those compromises. Now, once we've detected something, responses, similar responses. We have those block lists. We have banned senders. We have recipient rate limiting. We have a bunch of different mechanisms to say, we've seen something wrong. We need to start taking action. Again, it's a gradient, you know, where we would start out maybe limiting the amount of mail that a mailbox can send. And then moving forward from there. And I'll talk a little bit more about that response and the communication that goes alongside that a little later on. And finally, we have our, you know, our backstop, our, you know, big red button. You know, something gets through, gets past our monitoring, gets past our, you know, our standard responses. It's not just a compromise of one mailbox, but we see, you know, huge flood of something. We have additional mechanisms for service protection to say that, okay, you know, you may have gotten through our initial layer, but we don't want you to impact other customers. First and foremost, service availability is a huge priority for us, and we don't want to compromise that in any way. So we have hard stops at, you know, much higher than any average tenant or average user would do, but, you know, pretty much exactly the target that a spammer would love to hit as far as how quickly they can send messages, the quantity, you know, the disbursement, essentially, pretty much the acceleration of their campaign. And we do lock that down. And that protection is there so that one spammer can't take out the whole service or compromise an entire, you know, an entire data center, for example. There we go. And one thing I'm going to talk about today, which is new, actually, for us, for outbound protection, is outbound IP partitioning. So I'm going to talk a bit about outbound reputation and why that matters to everyone here, because, you know, Microsoft is managing our own reputation, but why is that important? Or if you don't use EOP, why it's important for you to manage your reputation, because it will affect your mail flow. And so outbound IP partitioning, I'll get more into the design of it and the purpose of it, but it's essentially segregating your outbound channels into the world to say, you know, again, somebody sends bad mail, gets through, missed, whatever happens, we're going to limit the amount of damage it can do so it won't affect other customers. So they have that segregation. So you have that containment of any issues that occur in the service. Again, that human component's always there, inbound and outbound. We have our engineering on call. We have our analysts. We have our support team fielding questions from customers, any issues that rise with the service. Our monitors and probes constantly fire alerts, wake us up 2 a.m. so that you guys don't have to get woken up at 2 a.m. And that's in place there as well, alongside the tools that we stated. You know, these are just, again, tools that we use to interface with the automated detection and response system that we have in place. And then finally, we have the same, a similar feedback mechanism to what I talk about in inbound. A little different in that because outbound is going to potentially affect the service's reputation, we actually have partners out in the wild that will submit back reports that tell us, hey, I received some spam from you guys that you didn't mark as spam. What's going on? And so, again, not the way that we want to find out. And again, I've heard this in a number of presentations, and I completely agree with it. If this is impacting customers, if we've missed it and we're reactive, we've already lost, but we're going to make ourselves better and catch it the next time around. And so that's what this reporting is for. We don't want to miss that signal to say, you did miss something. Get better about it. You know, improve your catch rate, improve your effectiveness. And so this reporting goes back into our system, helps tune it, prevents further misses in the future, and increases our effectiveness. And we have a number of partner companies that will submit to us for that. In addition, we constantly poll reputation providers. And these reputation providers, and we have a large number of them that we talk to let us know, you know, are they thinking about putting one of our IPs on a block list? Are they potentially going to interrupt customers' mail flow? We want to know about that way before any of that happens. Just because as soon as that occurs, if you're sending to a recipient from Microsoft, you're going to get blocked by anybody that's utilizing that reputation provider's block list. So we do have a channel to them. We are listening to them. We have tapped into that community very strongly in order to provide that early warning system, that canary in the mine that's going to tell us, uh-oh, something's wrong. And in addition to that, we have the data sources that, similar to what we talked about before for inbound, you know, we've subscribed to with third parties, and we have that internal data that's giving us that real-time feedback about how the system is performing in and of itself, rule hits, submissions, things along those lines. So reputation part two. You know, if you guys can keep count of how many times I've said reputation today, it's going to be a high number. But it is that critical, and it's so important. And one of the things for outbound that we have that's a little different than inbound is, because we have that extra visibility into reputation, and we have that tenant reputation versus the entire service reputation, it's going to be even more granularly and fine-tuned. And it's the detection of that's going to be even more of a kind of a tripwire and an agile determination than it is for inbound, where some of the sources are and some of the behavior is obfuscated to us. Now, when I said, you know, it's important to keep track of your own reputation if you don't use us, or Microsoft keeps track of its reputation, the reason for that is we have a lot of people out there that are listening, and a lot of recipients out there are reporting any spam that gets through, anything suspicious that they get through, any bulk that goes through. Some people, as Tamar said, you know, you might think you're sending out a newsletter that's, you know, light gray bulk, you know, everybody signed up for this, they love this, is the best thing. Somebody else might say, oh no, I never wanted this. And then they report that as spam. And you have enough of those reports. There are reputation providers out there that are extremely aggressive and take these reports really seriously. They'll start listing you as a spammer. And if any of your intended recipients sign up for that reputation provider to say, you know, tell me who the bad guys are out there, you're going to be on it. And that's obviously an undesirable situation to be in. And so keeping track of your reputation in that sense is very critical. And again, Microsoft does this for the entire service and all of its IPs that we're sending out of by constantly polling this network of top-tier reputation providers and saying, you know, how are we doing? Are you seeing a lot of reports about us? What's going on? And getting that early warning system so it's not just, oh, you know, you've been blocked, but more so, you're on your way, we see some weird stuff going on. And so that's something to be extremely proactive about, whether you use this or not. Now, I told you how we monitor today. We actually had a case not too long ago with South American reputation providers, small ones that were coming up. You know, and anytime a new reputation provider kind of comes up in the world and makes a name for itself in a region, a lot of times we see that they have very aggressive behavior. And I've heard this, you know, in other sessions in MEC, we're Microsoft, but we don't get a free pass. You know, we don't get just carte blanche to do whatever we want just because we have a name. We still are accountable for anything that comes in and out of our service. And so these new small reputation providers can oftentimes say, you know, regionally, I see a lot of suspicious traffic coming from you. You know, do something about it. And if we haven't interfaced with them before, we don't know that they're part of that community because they're brand new, we won't get that early warning system. And so if you find yourself or your customers or anyone you work with having that experience where they're getting blocked or they're seeing that their own infrastructure is telling them, you know, something's wrong, definitely let us know. Let us know what reputation provider is doing this. We are happy to add new relationships with up-and-coming reputation providers that, whether they're global or regional, whatever it has to be, you know, we'll talk to them. We're very happy to onboard new sources of data and be proactive about that. So if you do see that, feel free to contact our team. Now, focusing again on that new block that I was telling you guys about, outbound IP partitioning. What is it? Why is it important? So we've seen that as we've drilled down and matured as a service, we want to increase service resilience from these different campaigns and different attacks that are going on. So one of the ways that we're doing that is partitioning the channels that we're sending mail out into the world for. Now, how does this help the customer? You know, in developing this feature, we've tried to be as seamless as possible so customers don't have to make changes on their end. But what's going to happen is that, again, there's going to be affinity for certain pools of IPs such that the damage is limited and mitigated if there ever is a compromise. And there's multiple channels so that different types of mail can actually be isolated from other types of mail. Now, you asked me, you know, what are types of mail that we would potentially isolate from each other? And some of you, I'm sure, already know all about this, where we have good mail, and that goes out separately in different channels and different IP addresses than bad mail and high-risk mail. And some mail, you know, if it's super high confidence, we also reject. If we have NDRs to send out, that's going to be isolated. And bulk, as we mature in bulk classification, bulk will also get its own channel. And the reasoning for that is the pure good mail that, you know, there's no question about it, it's not suspicious in any way, shape, or form, we don't want to impact that. We don't want to get in the way of that getting delivered as fast as possible, you know, for people that have proven time and time again they have a good reputation. Now, part of the expansion of this feature is going to be that instead of just what we used to have, which is rule-based routing, to say, okay, you know, you guys are probably really familiar with this as far as, you know, exchange transport rules, and you talk about SEL, and you say, okay, it's marked bulk, send it to my junk mail folder, or do this action or that action. We're going to take a more heuristic approach to say, okay, it's not just the verdict, but it's other aspects of the mail that may cause it to route in different ways. Again, if you're good mail, you will always go out our good pools and you'll have that at affinity. But we could bump you through the other pools if we see bulk mail, for example, or we see spam. High confidence versus low confidence spam is a great example. You know, we want to mitigate that in the future as we go through and we say, okay, you know, false positives, we mark this as spam, but we're, you know, it's just over the threshold versus something that is definitely known to be malicious. You know, it has a URI that's for a known malware distributor. You know, we don't want to necessarily incorporate those two together. So as we expand the service more and more, we're focused on isolation. We're focused on preserving that differentiation as much as possible. Does anyone have any questions on this before I move on? Go ahead. So you're using the connector to, the question is, if you set up a connector to a business partner, will it be subject to this? So in this case, I'm assuming your business partner is one of the customers of ours as well. Yep. So if it's external and it's leaving the service, they will be subject to where this is going through. If it's within the service, though, if it's coming back through and we recognize them as one of our customers, we always deliver to our customers via the standard good mail outbound pool because we know that they'll honor whatever verdict that we give there. Does that answer your question? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Wendy, do you have a? Okay. I see head shaking, so I'm just concerned.
I'll ask you later.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, definitely come up and we can talk a little more about that. Maybe I misunderstood, but. Okay. Now, I know that everyone in this conference is very focused on on-prem. I don't want to ignore that. I don't want to talk about it like, you know, this is the only way. There are still benefits and there are still, you know, a bunch of configurations. Obviously, if you're you're connecting to EOP from on-prem and you have EOP standalone, or you have hybrid, or you're completely hosted, the protection doesn't really change. It doesn't get worse as you're going through one of these different solutions. So I did want to touch base on a couple of the common questions that we get, because we do get a lot of questions over and over again. So one of the things Tamara mentioned before was setting up transport rules for enhanced protection. So that's a topic that we see a lot from people that are saying, oh, you know, my bulk detection or the way that you're handling that mail is not strict enough. You're not aggressive enough in what you're blocking, and it's still coming into my inbox. Exchange transport rules are a great way to actually fine-tune and make it more aggressive than what our standard detection and response patterns are. And you can do this by setting up not just on keyword, okay, from these words that I see, like unsubscribe or whatever it happens to be, but you could actually do search patterns and essentially write a regex to say these patterns of words that you would also see. And there's a couple TechNet articles and blogs that will actually give you samples of common structures of bulk mail or spam mail that you can use to be even more aggressive about that kind of stuff. Now, besides that, there's also feedback loops to the admins themselves. And I'll show you screenshots about this in a second. But this is a really valuable feature set that's evolving right now, which is, how do we let the administrators of a tenant know that something is going on? I mean, it's great that we're handling this protection, but if action needs to be taken on a mailbox or something's going on with that tenant, we definitely don't want our customers to be in the dark about what's going on. And so there's two features I'll show you screenshots about as far as BCC suspicious and notifications about blocked mailboxes, things like that. But one thing I want to point out, which is something to keep an eye on in the coming quarters, Message Center. So the O365 Message Center, it's been shown in a lot of different demos, a lot of different talks. This is something that we're also going to leverage. So if you want visibility into actions that are being taken, we will start utilizing Message Center as we go forward with new features to give you reporting there to say, hey, these are the following actions or the following things that are affecting your tenant right now. So that will continue to evolve in parallel with all of our new features. They're all going to leverage Message Center in some way, shape, or form as much as possible, really. Next, quarantine functions with anti-spam. So I don't want to deep dive into quarantine itself, because I guess you can probably have half a session on that, something like that. But quarantine is something that I at least want to give mention to. It's something that a lot of our customers use as far as when you're doing that different, more granular configuration for ETRs, utilizing quarantine. It's not turned on by default. Definitely an option for a way to handle mail. And we had the announcement before, too, that in the coming quarters, we're actually going to allow users and not just admins to respond to quarantine messages, which I know is going to make a lot of people happy. So the admin doesn't have to handle everything themselves. Yeah, so that's coming soon. It's on the way. We've seen it. We're testing it. It's going to come. And then the last bullet here is about throttling behaviors. So I can't tell you how many questions I get about throttling constantly, because it is kind of a minefield. There's a lot of different throttling limits. If you look at our documentation, it's not always obvious which limit applies to who and what's going on there. So if you have questions about that, definitely come ask. But I'll give you at least a brief kind of overview of what we do. So when I talked about that service protection aspect, there are limits there that are very high and published on TechNet for, you're sending X hundred thousands of messages, you'll be stopped. There's a hard stop there. But if you look at, for example, if you got some hosted mailboxes, there's other limits that come into play. For example, there was a recipient rate limit saying that for any 24-hour period, 10,000 is the most that you can send. After that, for 24 hours, you won't be able to send further mail. Now, this is up from 1,500 in 14 as you move forward into the new release that we have now in Migrate Forward. Besides that, there's also message rate limiting, which is actually governing how many messages per minute you can send. Again, I think this is set at like 30 per minute, maybe, something along those lines. I'm not going to give exact numbers necessarily right now, but definitely all this stuff is published. The point of that, again, is preservation of the service. So it's important to note that these limits exist. For a lot of our customers, for example, EDUs, these limits can be used for your advantage too. So if you want to segregate groups of users and say, you know, I want them to have a different throttling policy because there's absolutely no reason why, you know, a student should be sending out 10,000 mails a day. It's not a bad strategy so that to prevent compromise issues to say, let me clamp down on certain subsets of mailboxes by instituting a stricter throttling policy because they're not the same maybe class of users as, you know, our distro list or, you know, our service mailboxes, for example. So any questions on this slide so far? So these are the screenshots I was telling you about before. If you haven't set this up for any of your tenants that you have right now, definitely it's a good feature to take advantage of. This first one is the copy of all suspicious outbound messages. This will give you an idea of what's actually hitting your system and what's leaving your system, essentially. So if you have a compromise, you know, what kind of mail, what kind of campaign is it, so you get a better idea and respond to that as well and know why we're blocking you. It also helps you report false positives. So if we BCC a suspicious mail to whatever address you've given us and you say, hey, this isn't spam, we can definitely take that submission, analyst team can respond to it, and we can figure out why we misclassified it and tune the system accordingly. Now, the next one is a notification if we've taken action. And this is something, like I said, you know, we're going to give more of this reporting, like overall overview information in Message Center. But right now, we can notify you if we've taken the action of, saying, blocking a specific sender within your organization for whatever reason, sent too much spam, sent too much volume, whatever it happens to be, please give us an address to contact you. We have no other way of letting you know that we've, you know, taken action. And this will allow you to be more proactive about saying, oh, no, you know, someone was blocked. I don't have to wait for that sender to contact me, I can already contact them and say, hey, you've been compromised, or hey, you know, you've been blocked. What's going on? Were you giving out your password somewhere, or what is it?
Okay.
So that was everything we've gone through. Again, you know, just strong in-house technology, this third-party environment and this ecosystem that we're tuned into, and our analysts that are ever watchful, kind of like the superheroes of anti-spam. This is all kind of leading into the vision of where we're going with this. You know, stronger reputation detection and a better communication out to our admins and our customers as we move forward, so you have more visibility into what we're doing. That's really the philosophy of where anti-spam protection is going moving forward. Okay. So now we'll do a general Q&A. If you guys have any questions left, any interest? Yeah, go ahead. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sure. Okay. So the question is, for reporting, especially inbound, you know, anything hitting the edge is not logged and not in the message traces that you can actually push in to do different telemetry on. So I know that we don't have that now. Raise of hand, you know, show of hands, how many people are really interested in that, seeing what's hitting the edge? Okay. It's definitely something we're happy to take into account. We've heard this request before. You know, I've heard this a couple times already at this conference. So it's definitely something I'll take back to the product team and look into. I know reporting is something that's evolving quickly right now, so it's in the
aggregate reporting.
Yeah.
The count.
Only the count, not. I think his specific question was about. What's that?
Not the reasons why.
Not the reason.
Yeah.
Yes, but looking into the count, do you want the detail on this huge amount of data?
I think the specific ask here is
that's interesting.
Investigating, you know, if there's a specific message or something like that from a partner and that got blocked at the edge, for example, why was it blocked at the edge? Because that's not always as transparent as it could be.
One of the things that we do, though, is that when we do block a message at the network edge, the sender is going to get a definite response as to what the issue is.
Yep.
Or you don't have access to deliver to it.
I'd say half the time
back.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get it.
Yep.
So we're left with the what's happening.
Yep. Now, question for you guys. This good chance to directly influence design. So as I was talking about before, when there is outbound IP partitioning, and we're talking about actually isolating types of mail, if we were to isolate the NDRs to a specific range, for example, and we said, OK, all of our customers, please whitelist this range so that you know that your essentially your ISP as much as you can influence them in some cases, please accept messages from this specific partition, because that's just NDRs we're sending. Would that alleviate some of the issues here? Do you feel like? Sure. Sure. Fair. Yep. Good. You first, and then we'll go front to back. Go ahead.
We have no control over the IPs that you pick. It's kind of like the Postini solution, what it sounds like. Is there any provisions for? We have one customer. We have specifically designated the IP address we send from.
Yes.
A firewall before the TLS.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a provisions for something like that?
So
you can't roll IPs with that.
Sure. So we publish the range of IPs that we send for outbound good mail. For suspicious mail, high-risk mail, we haven't published those ranges, and that's not something that we're doing because we do roll those IPs, because there's a turnover as reputation degrades in them, because it's going to happen. Part of the goal for outbound partitioning is that because we can isolate other types of mail, like NDRs, out of that, they won't roll over, and we can publish those ranges, because they'll be in dedicated pools that no high-risk mail will come out of. And so in that case, you can make provisions to say, yeah, you know, this is a published range in addition to my good mail that's just NDRs or, you know, just bulk mail. And I actually always want to receive that, as opposed to the high-risk pools that, you know, there's a lot of garbage that comes through there, and we, you know, the IP ranges have to be dynamic in that case. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Do you have another question? So it sounds like the request here is for reporting based on what was blocked at the edge for a more granular level than just the aggregates that we have today. So take it back. Yep. Sorry, I couldn't hear that last bit. Can you speak up? Do you want to come to the microphone or sorry? I'm just, you're the opposite edge of the room. Thanks.
So I was going to say, more detail in the actual reporting part of it. So what I've seen, if you go like in the report where it has, you know, show me everything in the last 24 or 48 hour screen,
mm-hmm.
they'll all say received. But if you dig deep into or go into that particular one, then it'll show you like step three was quarantined. So instead of having to dig deep into the message, is that front screen would say this one's quarantined versus received.
Sure. So surface earlier, the actual action that's occurring on that message based on whatever configuration is present.
Right.
So it's not just saying received, but it's actually digging deeper into the next stage of what happened after that. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I believe so.
Wendy, do you know?
I'm sorry.
Respecting ADSP, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I'll find out. I'll follow up for you.
ADSP is, I don't know if I
We can dig into it. That's fine. Any other questions? No? Okay. Thanks. Definitely reach out to us with any further questions. We're happy to give you more information. Fill out the evaluations. Let us know, was the session valuable? Do you like what we presented? You know, we'll continue to tweak our information that we give out to you guys to let you know exactly what we're thinking about. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, and if anyone's interested, tomorrow there's a session, Notes from the Field.
Right.
They're going to talk about configuring connectors, a lot of the setup stuff, super valuable, tomorrow morning. So definitely show up there, and a lot of good panel discussions. So thanks.
Thank you.